Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So glad you tuned in, and a very happy Thursday to you. Well, here's my question for you today. Are you ready for it? When you think about and read about the early church, and then you think about the church today, do you see a lot of similarities, or do you see a drastic disconnect? Well, my guest today writes this. He says, I'm more convinced than ever that the greatest need of any Christian is to rediscover the power unleashed by reconnecting with and actually following Jesus. I am so excited to have author and pastor Ray Johnston back with us on the show. We had such a fantastic conversation a couple of months back. We just had to invite him back to talk about his great book. There's so much here. Seriously, we could do a show a week for the next several months. Title of his book, Jesus Called, He Wants His Church Back. I love that title. What Christians in the American Church Are Missing. And the thing is, Ray's a pastor, and he said this at the outset of our other conversation. This is not a church-bashing book by any means. He loves the local church, as do we, but this really, really is about reconnecting with Jesus and just taking inventory and a deeper look at how much of what we do is by rote, by ceremony, at the expense of faith engagement and love for Jesus. You are in for a treat and a surprise, I really believe. Looking forward to having Ray on here in just a moment. Second hour, it's our monthly edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy, and we look at the emotional, spiritual, chemical, physical connection to the things that ail us. And Dr. Troy will take your questions and calls, and that's always a hit. So looking forward to that as well. Quick announcement before we get Ray back on the show with us here. Just want you to know that we are partnering with the National Association of Evangelicals in hopes to see 1 million Christians praying on Sunday, July 10th. They have spearheaded this initiative, and if you want more information, nae.net. But the point is, sign up yourself, your life group, your church, and we're hoping to see 1 million Christians appealing to God in heaven on Sunday, July 10th, together, just asking God, have mercy, bring revival, forgive us our sins. Boy, we deserve judgment, but bring mercy, Lord, and realign us with your purposes. And today's conversation really, to me, is such a jump start to that. So if you want more information, check out nae.net. Okay, here's another excerpt from Jesus Called. Ray writes this, Jesus is popular in America. After 2,000 years, he's still a global favorite and sits at the top of the U.S. polls. He's more popular than rugby, soccer, football. He's more popular than Beyonce, Frank Sinatra, Mozart. He's quoted more often than Winston Churchill, Woody Allen, or Forrest Gump's mom. But with all of his popularity, hardly anyone ever finds fault with Jesus or obeys him. Let me tell you about Ray. We'll get him on the show. Ray Johnston is senior pastor of Bayside Church in Granite Bay, California. He believes that the church is called to outreach, spiritual growth, and equipping our leaders. In addition to his tireless efforts at Bayside, Ray serves as president of Developing Effective Leaders. He also speaks frequently at conferences, leadership training events, family camps, national youth events. He's actually at an event even today and taking time out from a camp so he can talk to us. He's got a great influencer page up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Pastor Ray, welcome back to the program.
It is nice to be back. And Susie, I hear the amount of people listening is growing.
That is true, and we are excited. You know, Ray, we pray for growth both in number and in maturity and fruit. And so however people grow, we are excited about it, and we're seeing it on all sides. Very, very glad.
Well, it's not surprising. After we hung up the last time we talked, I called my wife and said, I just had the most fun radio talk I've ever had. And she said, who was with? I said, Susie's just got pizzazz. So those of you listening know exactly what I'm talking about. So it's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Ray. That means a lot. Well, as you know, we start out our conversations talking scripture. And you, being the overachiever, came armed with a verse, which I'm so glad about. Philippians 1:6, and I'm certain that God, who began the good work within you, will continue his work until it's finally finished on the day when Christ returns. Talk about that verse, if you would.
Well, first of all, it's my life verse.
Awesome.
As a matter of fact, I just finished speaking about 15 minutes ago at a conference center here, and I just autographed a whole bunch of books for people, and I put Philippians 1:6 in every single book. And the reason that's such a big deal is this. Paul says, I am confident. And I actually believe this. If somebody's not confident, if they aren't living with hope, then the odds they have a great future go way down, which I actually believe this. I think the enemy is going to try to get people, he's going to try to replace God-honoring confidence with insecurity and fear and dread and produce Christians that are either cynical or discouraged, and both of those things are cancer of the spirit. And Paul says, yeah, I'm confident of this, that God is – actually, I spoke at a church this weekend. It's a kind of a large West Coast church that just went through some really tough times. And the first thing I did was I stood up and said, people, I am really, really sorry. But I also said to these people, I want you to know God is working, especially when it doesn't look like God is working. And when I asked these folks, I said, has anybody here ever seen tapestry? I mean, you look at this beautiful thing on a wall, and then all of a sudden you flip it over, and the backside of that thing is a tangled up mess. And I said to these folks, most of the time, because we're human beings, we're only looking at the backside, and our life looks like a mess, and circumstances look out of control. And occasionally what happens is God finally shows up and works, and you turn the thing around, and you realize God had a plan for the whole thing when it is. And I just would say, anybody listening to this today where you're going, you've tuned in because you need encouragement, be encouraged. God is working in your life, in your family, in your kids, even when it doesn't look like he's working. God is still working.
Boy, that's such a good word. And the whole idea of confident hope, and if we don't have it, it's so worth retracing our steps to say, where did I lose it? Because, Ray, as you're talking, it's not only cancer to the soul to be cynical and jaded. It's cancer to the overall witness, because we have a watching world going, you know, do you believe this stuff? Because it doesn't look like you do. I mean, it really does matter how we're framing our perspective about today, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. I've been speaking pretty much all week. And the other day I told these people, I said, write two words down. Write focus and then write emotion. And I said, what you focus on will determine your emotional condition, not your – a lot of people are going, I'm discouraged because this bad thing happened. It was funny. The Israelites, they're exiting the promised land. They're exiting for the promised land. And Pharaoh starts to chase them down. And it says they looked back at Pharaoh and were filled with fear. And I mean, whatever somebody focuses on determines their emotional condition. And when somebody focuses only on their problems, their emotional condition is I'm discouraged and I expect defeat. When somebody focuses on God instead of expecting defeat and being discouraged, they expect God to show up and work and they're encouraged. And it's not our circumstances that take us down, even as tough as they are. It's not our circumstances. It's our focus that ultimately determines whether I'm emotionally healthy or not.
So good. You know, last time we chatted, I was so amazed by some of all of your church story, and I know you're going to unpack some of those stories, just how God really has moved in and through your church body. But this passage reminds me of what you've been doing at Bayside, and from Romans 12. Don't just pretend to love others. Really love them. Hate what is wrong.
Absolutely.
Hold tightly to what is good. Love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. Never be lazy, but work hard and serve the Lord enthusiastically. Here it is. Rejoice in our confident hope. Be patient in trouble. Keep on praying. When God's people are in need, be ready to help them. Always be eager to practice hospitality. I mean, you could really, Ray, put that up on a big sign in your church foyer, because that's the stuff you guys have tangibly been tending to, isn't it?
Yeah, although you know what, it wasn't. This is embarrassing to admit, but it wasn't always like that. 10 years ago, I was pastoring the fastest growing church on the West Coast, and I went to a Bible study in Newport Beach, and we were studying Acts chapter 2, which should drive the church. And in Acts chapter 2, it said they were selling their possessions and goods and gave to anyone who had needs. This guy went to a board and he wrote down the words good deeds. And he said the early church started with good deeds. Two verses later, it says they had something an American church doesn't have. It says they had favor with God and all the people, which Christians don't have favor with people right now. And he said their good deeds led to goodwill. The very next verse says, and the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. And he went up and he wrote good news. And I sat there embarrassed and ashamed because I thought, like almost every one of the 320,000 churches in America, I've been trying to deliver the good news without good deeds, and so there's very little goodwill. And I called our staff together and apologized. I said, we will go back to the Bible pattern of good, starting with good deeds. That'll create goodwill. And I said, and if it wrecks our church, at least we'll be wrecking it for the right reasons.
Hmm.
And we changed everything. I mean, campaign, our capital campaigns changed. We started raising money and giving it away. I mean, it has been a night. For example, once a year now, we shut our church down. And we literally, no services on the weekend. We interview every mayor, every principal, and everybody that works with the poor. And last October, we unleashed almost 10,000 people to serve in 160 spots in our community. And it was fun because somebody came up to one of our pastor's wives, and the news showed up, and put a microphone in front of her and said, hey, why are you doing this? And she had a great line. She said, instead of going to church this weekend, we just thought we'd go be the church.
Mm.
And I started thinking, what would the reputation of Jesus and Christianity be if every single church in America once a year shut down and brought the love of Christ into every corner of their community, every school, every hurting person, showed up, paid for everything, did it for free? We had businesses phoning us, like Home Depot called and said, can we work with you? So 70 of Home Depot's employees and 70 of our people worked side by side and redid a retirement center. Restaurants called us and closed for the day and served with us. I mean, the secular business community is calling the church to ask if we can get connected and do things together.
And that's the goodwill of the people, isn't it? I mean, having favor because you're already rolling your sleeves up.
Yeah, what's funny is I think sometimes we think we're smarter than God. And, what happened is, it was pretty simple. Go back to Acts chapter 2 and just ask the question. The early church exploded. What were they doing? And let's just go back to that recipe. And it has been game-changing ever since. I mean, we have a world-class African-American pastor who's a good friend of mine in town. And he told me, he said, I don't think that you get that the schools on my side of town aren't like the schools in your suburbs. And so he and I said, that can't be true. So he and I drove around for an entire day. He took me to every elementary school in his area. They're a disaster. I mean, no playgrounds, busted windows, no air conditioning in Sacramento, which is crazy. And then I drove back home to our beautiful schools. And what we started doing is this. Every year and a half, we shut our churches down, his church and my church, and we rent Arco Arena where the Kings play. And we do one massive worship service, and we raise money. And so far, we've rehabbed 6 inner-city schools. And the second time we did this, one of the cynical principals of one of the elementary schools came to Arco Arena, not a Christian, just showed up to see, who are these nutcases that are going to raise money and redo my school? Comes to Arco Arena, ends up becoming a Christian at the end of that service, and has been leading a men's Bible study ever since. And I thought, no matter how you do it, good deeds lead to goodwill, which lead to openness to good news.
Mm.
And what's going on in our country these days is Christians are trying to be accepted by our culture by changing our theology. Instead of changing our theology, we need to be known as the people that love our community most and are fully engaged and bringing the love of Christ to our community. And then people will be okay with us believing things they don't necessarily agree with.
Wow.
Because at least they know we care.
Wow, so good. Talking to author, Pastor Ray Johnston. Title of his book, I love this book, Jesus Called. He wants his church back. And this is what that looks like. What Christians in the American church are missing. We've got more stories like that on the other side. If you've got questions, I'm going to give Ray the whole time, not taking calls, but email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Let's see, we've got 3 copies of this great book. If you want in on the drawing, put Jesus Called in the subject line. Don't forget your mailing address. Include your question, comment if you've got one. More with author, Pastor Ray Johnston when we return.
You're the one who made the heavens. You're the one who shaped the earth.
Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, and I purposely chose all Lincoln Brewster bumper songs this hour because Ray Johnson joins me. He's an author and a senior pastor. Lincoln is his worship pastor. Lincoln's been on the show before. In fact, my son loves Lincoln, is a great guitar player, and got to join me to interview Lincoln, Such a Small World. And like I said, I love Ray's book, Jesus Called, He Wants His Church Back. And Ray, you open the book by telling a story about a time in the 1800s when Niagara Falls was threatened, and a whole community actually was destroyed by what started as this kind of subtle shift, but ended in a huge disaster. I know you wrote the book a little while ago, but do you remember that story?
Yes, I do. And it was basically what I'd say is this. There are things that if they get unleashed can cause all kinds of trouble. Hey, by the way, can we back up to Lincoln just for a second?
Yeah.
I have had the privilege of working with Lincoln for, 15 years now. And he grew up in Homer, Alaska. If anybody listening watches The Deadliest Catch, the Time Bandits, that's his boat. All those crazy guys on that boat. Lincoln grew up in a dysfunctional, really disaster of a household, and so did I. And so what's interesting, both of us met Christ at different times, and then he came on our staff, and I have gotten to be sort of like, I've gotten to re-raise him.
Wow.
And been like an older brother to that guy. And I have never seen anybody as good leading worship in my entire life. I mean, he's amazing. But as good as he is on stage, he's even better off stage.
Wow.
He is a great husband, great dad, world-class Christian. We just made him one of the senior pastors at Bayside. I mean, he develops people spiritually. He's very sharp.
That's amazing.
I mean, and he's got a servant's heart. I mean, here he is at 19. Steve Perry from Journey calls Lincoln. And Lincoln will never brag about him. So he would never tell you this stuff. Lincoln gets a phone call from Steve Perry from Journey at 19 years old. And Lincoln thought he was joking, so he hung up on him. He thought he was playing the joke. Steve calls him back and says, whoa, it's really me, man. I want you to come down and play. And he ends up being this guitar prodigy. So he is playing with Journey and Steve Perry at age 19. And he said he was in the Hollywood Bowl and lights on, thousands and thousands of people trying to grab his ankles. And he had just become a Christian. And he looks up at the lights and he just felt like God said, this isn't it for you. And so after being with Steve Perry for a while, he resigned that and became a sound guy at a church in Modesto, California.
Wow.
And so 1 week he's on stage in front of 50,000 people, and a month later he is setting up sound equipment on Friday night for weddings on Saturday.
My goodness.
Clients telling him what to do.
Wow.
And it's interesting. There's a great verse in the Bible that says, "Humble yourself humble yourself in the mighty hand of God. He'll exalt you at the right time."
Wow.
And Lincoln never set out to be Lincoln Brewster. Lincoln set out to serve God and never tried to get on stage. Just started being a sound guy. And then somebody asked him to do worship, and he ended up coming to Bayside, and the fire got lit. And his Christmas CD hit number one on iTunes, and it was above Michael Bublé.
Wow.
And the other thing people don't know is this: Lincoln came out with that Christmas CD and gave every dime of the proceeds of that CD to kids dying in the Congo with World Vision. World Vision said they'd never have a Christian artist give the entire seed to the cause before. So
thank you.
Just kind of a cool backstory. Wow. Stuff about your listeners they would never know about Lincoln because he's too humble to
share.
Talk about this stuff.
And, you know, just got to say, my middle son, who used to be my strong-willed child, watched Lincoln. He would play his YouTube instructional videos. He impacted him on so many levels. So to have him as a young adult worship leader talk to Lincoln when I had Lincoln on the show was such a treat. I mean, look, you see his fruit-bearing fruit. So what a – and you are fruit-bearing fruit because you invested in him. I mean, what a beautiful story.
Yeah, absolutely. And and it's kind of fun because, I mean, you know, like I get to hear stories like this now. Like Lincoln's at the Hollywood Bowl, and Steve Perry's big song, Don't Stop Believin', has this really, really technical, difficult guitar riff in it. And Robert Downey Jr. is backstage and said, I don't think that skinny kid's going to be able to pull that off, and walked out to watch him. And Lincoln killed it. Robert Downey Jr. walked back and said, well, I guess the kid's got it.
Wow.
So there's all kinds of fun stories like this. But it was kind of a neat thing. Lincoln got to be in settings like that with folks like that, and still has an ongoing ministry at different points to people in that world. It's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, isn't it in Proverbs that your gift brings you before kings and people of influence?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, God really has put a gift in him, and he's humbly stewarded it, you know?
Yes, that's exactly right. Matter of fact, spiritual gifts is one of my favorite things. 1 Corinthians 12 changed my life, and it was three simple words, and it's right in order. I think verse 4 says there are varieties of gifts. The next verse, I think it's verse 5, says, and there are varieties of ministries or service. And the next verse says, but the same God works. And when I read that, I went, wow, verse 4 says gifts, verse 5 says service, and verse 6 says God works. And I thought, wow, if somebody will take their gifts, put them into service, God shows up and works.
Fantastic.
And I think the enemy is basically going, he doesn't mind if people have gifts. He's trying to keep people from going from verse 4 to verse 5.
Boy, so true. Okay, oh my goodness, I have so many questions. We have 2 minutes before our hard bottom of the hour break, so you might have to start this story and then pick it up on the other side. But you tell about a time in Africa that you actually were toward the end of the trip and feeling pretty discouraged by the segregation and just sort of the flat line. Go ahead and say a little bit about that, and I'll jump in if I have to.
You bet. Yeah, well, you'll probably have to. Carol and I were invited to speak in South Africa to train pastors for 2 weeks at the Dutch Reform, and it was the Dutch Reformed Church. Now, the Dutch Reformed Church, largest church in South Africa, but they were the oppressors. It was all white. They actually formed the theological foundation for apartheid.
And
so we went there, and it was one depressing after another. It was traditional, negative, uptight, critical, nothing but rules, no life, no pizzazz, and all white and segregated after another. And after about 10 days, I was like, oh, let's just go home. And we're getting ready to fly out the next day, and I get a phone call, and they stopped and said, hey, can you fly up to Johannesburg and preach at the largest Dutch Reformed Church in South Africa? So we switched our flights, flew up to Johannesburg, and everything changed. I mean, we walked in, and I was expecting another all-white, segregated, small, dead, uptight, traditional church. It was vibrant. Thousands of people, blacks and whites together. The only time I saw that in South Africa. And the services in English and Swahili. And I preached, and the guy translated it into Swahili, which was a blast because I talk fast and I'm hard to translate. And finally, I couldn't take it anymore. And the pastor is sitting right next to me in the front row during worship. And the worship was vibrant and long. And I finally said, how long have you been here? And he said, 10 years. So was it like this when you got here? He said, oh, no, it's like all the rest.
And that's where you have to pause. I can't wait.
Perfect, because you're going to love his answer when we come back. People, don't go anywhere.
Exactly. You're going to have to sit at the edge of your seat and wait to hear what this pastor said, because this was this thriving remnant in South Africa. Ray will tell the rest of the story on the other side. Got a few copies of Jesus Called. Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put Jesus Called in the subject line. Don't forget your mailing address. Your name goes in a drawing. 3 of you get a copy of Ray's book. You're going to love this. You're going to have to read it several times. More with Ray Johnston when we return.
I love you, Lord, with all my heart. You've given me a brand new start. And I just want to sing this song to you.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. So honored and blessed to be talking to senior pastor, author Ray Johnston, about his book, Jesus Called, He Wants His Church Back, What Christians and the American Church Are Missing. And you know this if you listen often enough. I go through 10 books a week because I do 10 interviews a week. And I will tell you, Ray's book stands out as one of my top favorites in the last 6 months. I'm telling you, it's fantastic. Well, we've got 3 copies to get into your hands. So this is what you do. Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put Jesus Called in the subject line. Don't forget your mailing address. Your name will go in a drawing. Before the break, Ray, you were talking about a trip you and your wife took to South Africa, and it was like to the point where you were ready just to go home because you'd visited one dead church after another. They were segregated, legalistic, uptight, shut down in every other way. And yet one last stop revealed this vibrant, thriving church. Worship was amazing. You got up and preached, were translated, and you couldn't stand it anymore. You asked the pastor Has it always been like this? Take it from there.
Exactly. The worship's going on a long time. Pastor and I are in the front row, so I hit him and I said, he said, I've been here 10 years. I said, was it like this when you got here? He said, oh, no. It was like all the rest, segregated, dead, traditional, critical. And I said, what happened? He said, I went into the board meeting, my first board meeting. He said, I went up to the head of the table, and I put a chair at the head of the table. And he said, that chair will never be sat in again. That's Jesus' chair. And he said, the last time I checked, he's supposed to be the head of the church. And it doesn't look to me like we're doing a very good job without him.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, I would recommend, why don't we give him back his church? And so the only question we're going to ask is this, not what is our culture telling us to do, not what does South Africa do, what does Jesus want us to do? And he said, and we will follow that as well as we can. And he said, everything changed. He said, like the worship wars that everybody fought, he said, we realized, you know what, people are confusing their beliefs and their preferences, and they think that their worship preferences are God's preferences. He goes, that all went away. He said, this is just what Jesus wanted us to sing. He said, when it came to the children's building, he said, they're the best children's building I've seen in a long time. He said, this is just what Jesus wants to do for kids. And then we stood up, the whole congregation standing up singing. And I mean, I'm looking around, I got choked up, I had tears in my eyes. Because, I mean, it was the only time in South Africa that I saw blacks and whites together, and they are singing side by side, arms around each other, in English and Swahili, and he swept his arm over the entire thing, and then he looked at me, and he said, this is just what Jesus wanted to do all along. And I came back to that, and I thought, what would happen if Christians started basically saying, you know what, why don't we just follow Jesus? Why don't we put him back in first place? And that's actually why I wrote this book. I wanted to give somebody a book that if we're working with people, it's an invitation to follow the Jesus that most American Christians somehow have never been introduced to or don't obey.
Wow, so good. And in the book, I pray you'll get a copy of Ray's book, but you talk about these things that we lost in each of these past few decades. I'm going to read through these.
Oh,
it's amazing. 1950s, Americans lost innocence. 60s, lost authority. 70s, lost love. 80s, lost values. 90s, lost faith. 2000, lost security. 2010, lost hope. And when I was thinking about just some of the work that God has just inspired your church to do and be mobilized in the community, I remembered a story of a woman who left a sizable donation to a particular church, but the infighting of the staff and the elder board was so bad around what to do with it. Was it buy a new piano? Is it carpet? Is it whatever? That they turned around and gave it back to the family because they couldn't agree on what to do with it. And I was looking at one of the points in your book, American Christians have started caring about the wrong things. And you referenced a conversation you had with a woman who said this very thing to you as it relates to prayer in schools. You care about prayer in schools, but what about poverty in schools? So talk about that conversation and then what you did about it.
That's right. And, well, I would back it up one, and I would say this. I call them the three circles. I think our country has been doing away with Jesus. Okay, I mean, Starbucks will not print Merry Christmas on a coffee cup anymore. And by the way, I got up in front of our church and I said, don't let that rob you of joy. Keep going to Starbucks. I said, don't pick at them. Don't whine about it. And I said, if you want, I told our whole church, I said, hey, if you want Jesus on you, just tell, when they ask you what your name is, just say Merry Christmas. Then they have to write it on your cup. Well, you're going to be fine.
There you go.
And I said, live with joy. Yeah. And the same thing. It's like, our country, our churches, and individual Christians have been removing Jesus. And so I think what's going on is Christians and churches have got to look more like Jesus, love more like Jesus, and live more like Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been trying to – this is a little bit of a roundabout way of asking questions. We have been trying to train our congregation. For example, I was at a church a couple weeks ago where there was picketing. Okay. Well, it was hot outside, so we just got them cold water all morning long, and because we're supposed to love our enemies.
Wait, were they picketing your church?
No, it was a different church, and I was a guest there, and they had some issues recently, and I just went, you know what? The Bible says we're supposed to love our enemies. Here's the deal. People need to realize this. I put this in the book. God wants his enemies won over, not wiped out. You know, what's the difference between the Christian faith and radical fundamental Islamists, you know, and ISIS? Is we believe God wants his enemies loved. God wants his enemies won over. God says, love your enemies. Mm. So I thought, this is the perfect chance to teach this church a lesson. So get cold water, go out, love these folks, and go that direction. And same thing, we do a Thrive conference every year. And this and about, oh gosh, I think probably 4,000 people from this year, 34 countries and about 30 states showed up. And it is an absolute ball. But one of the things we're trying to do is train all these Christians that our faith is going to be viewed differently if we unleash compassion and we actually reflect the love of Christ. And so we brought a gal up to speak. We have a ministry in Sacramento called St. John's Center for Women and Children. They get women. It's the only place in Sacramento that gets women and children off the street and gives them a safe place to stay. So we've been working with them for years. They had a woman go there. She was a disaster. She went there. She met Christ, fully, fully restored, and is now has a job and is walking about 2-3 hours a day to her job. So we didn't tell her the truth. We said, we want you to give your testimony to this whole group of leaders on Friday night. So I brought her up. I introduced her, and she stood in front of these 4,000 business leaders and Christian leaders and moms and dads, kind of an intimidating environment. And I said, what was your life like before you went to St. John's? And she looked at these people, and she said, it sucked. She said, I was a meth – sorry about anybody's offended about that, but that's what she said. She said, it sucked. I was a meth addict. I lost all my family, all my friends, and almost lost my life. My life sucked. And the whole place just riveted. And I said, what's it like now? Well, I've met Jesus. And she goes, for the first time in 10 years, I have a job and all that kind of stuff. And then we said, well, and what had happened is we had told the whole group that morning her story, and we had taken an offering, and we were hoping to raise about $3,000 to $4,000 to buy her a used car.
Wow.
Well, what happened is they gave better than that. So Future Ford in Sacramento, the head of that, goes to our church. So we said to her, these people here knew your story before you got here tonight, and we took an offering this morning, and they gave enough money in this offering. They gave $19,200 in an offering this morning, and we had driven this thing into the building, and this sheet came off, and we said, we have bought you and fully paid off for you a brand new Ford, and she just falls apart and grabs the person next to her and holds on and is shaking and crying, these tears. And we said, by the way, that's not all. We had money left over, so we paid your taxes and your insurance for the next 3 years, because Oprah didn't do that. And then, and we had some money left over on that. So here's a $750 gas card. And we had, and we said, and we had $5,000 left over on that. So we handed the director of St. John's a check for $5,000, and we just said, keep doing what you're doing. She's crying, and you know what's interesting is, I'm watching this, and I'm going, everybody in the building's crying. I'm crying. She's crying, but I don't know how to describe this other than it's tears of joy. People are applauding and cheering and crying all at the same time, and I thought, when does that kind of joy come to people? It only happens to people who give and self-sacrifice and let God use them. And then what happened is this, what our congregation doesn't know, is that what that conference didn't know is this. She got in that car with the director to drive out of our parking lot that night, and she drove about 50 feet and then stopped, looked at the director and said, this is the first time in 10 years I've had a car that I didn't have to sleep in tonight.
Wow.
And I just sit there and I go, I believe there's a hurting world and a broken world. And when we deliver the love of Christ, it transforms the individuals. But we start becoming the people Jesus described when he said, I didn't come to be served, but to serve. And we start actually looking, living, and loving, and leading like Jesus.
You know, Ray, I'm just listening to this. You know, it's in our DNA to give because God loved so much that he gave. He gave his son. And
that's
so
right.
Don't you feel like when you're doing that, you're really just, it's activating your spiritual root system because it's part of the DNA. I feel like you can't even really fully mature until this is part of your life of faith, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And sometimes it'll take you, I mean, I actually think it's the only way somebody actually becomes fully alive is when they are serving. And it was, I think it's my way. We tell our church all the time, I say, there's three ways you can live. And by the way, anybody listening to this, you get this. There's only three options you have in life. Please God, or please other people, or please yourself. Two of those options lead to disaster. In other words, if you leave to please other people, you will be worried about what other people think of you your entire life, and you will spend your entire life being insecure. In other words, you will never get out of junior high emotionally. Who wants to stay in junior high? Or you're going, well, I'm not going to live to please other people. I'll live to please myself. That's always a disaster. You know, and I can prove it. When's the last time you met a self-centered, happy person? They don't exist. The only way to live a life that is emotionally and psychologically healthy is, by and large, serve God, serve other people, and joy is a byproduct of that choice.
Man, as you're tending to the things that are on God's heart, and I don't remember who said it, but that Jesus solves the world's problems through the hands of some of his friends. I mean, as you just respond to him and then sow into others, what's it done for your capacity to know God's heart, Ray? Just as a man loved by God, you know, not any of your roles, not a dad, husband, pastor, author, but as Ray, God's son. I mean, what's that done for your just personal, intimate connection with him?
Oh, you know what's interesting is this. I think, kind of like everybody out there listening, I wake up. I'm a pastor, okay, but I'm just like everybody else out there. I mean, I wake up discouraged sometimes. I wake up fearful, or I wake up jealous. You know, I have all those emotions spinning around inside, and you know who actually the quote that changed my life in this area, because this is exactly what it relates to, Corrie Ten Boom, who a lot of your readers know. I mean, she and her sister Betsy and their whole family were thrown into, you know, Nazi, you know, concentration camps. All of her relatives were killed. Her sister was killed, all that kind of stuff. She wrote something one time that changed my life. She said, look around and be distressed. Look inside and be depressed, or look at Jesus and be at rest.
Wow.
And I remember one time when I was really discouraged and I wasn't bouncing back, and I usually bounce back pretty quickly, because I think when you get your eyes on God and you get back in service, I think your heart warms up. In other words, your heart's either hard or soft, and your heart warms up. But what happens is I wasn't bouncing back, and I read that and I went, wow, look around and be distressed. People are going, oh no, Hillary and Donald and what in the world's up to our country. And well, I know a lot of Christians, they've spent all their time looking around and they are very distressed. They have distressed hearts. Or they look inside all the time and they have very depressed hearts. And I know exactly what that feels like, because it's exactly where I was. And then she, this brilliantly wise older lady, said, or you can look at Jesus and be at rest. And that pulled me out of a pit of discouragement I was in, and I've never forgotten it.
Boy, that's fantastic. And Corrie is just one of my faith heroes. Okay, when we come isn't she amazing? When we come back, we're going to zip through a list of 7 habits of highly defective Christians. I think that's kind of funny. I'm sorry. But then we're actually going to leave with 3 ways to strengthen your foundation of faith. Talking to author Pastor Ray Johnston about his book, Jesus Called, He Wants His Church Back. Imagine what would happen if Jesus was at the head of our lives, of our homes, of our churches, of our businesses. I think revival just might break out. Don't go away. More with Ray when we return. Lincoln Brewster, love that album, Oxygen. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. talking to author, Senior Pastor Ray Johnston about his book, Jesus Called, He Wants His Church Back, What Christians and the American Church Are Missing. As I said at the open of the show, this, and Ray says this too, this is not a church-bashing book. This is really God's heart for the church because we have strayed. We've lost our way on so many levels. Ray writes, few brand new Christians are lukewarm. Most new believers have a vibrant faith. Worship is fresh and new. The Bible's becoming an open book. Stunned by God's amazing grace, they can't wait to help their friends experience the same. Then something happens. Their romance of God turns to routine. Delight turns to disillusionment. Enjoying God is replaced by enduring life. And another church-attending, cross-wearing, lukewarm Christian is produced. And you identify, Ray, 7 habits of highly defective Christians. And I just got to read through them and have you just speak to whatever's on your heart. Undeveloped,
sure.
Undeveloped faith, uncommitted hearts, undeveloped character, unrepentant lifestyles, unread Bibles, unresolved conflicts, unused gifts. Seriously, this is a brilliant list, and it's just absolutely true. So what say you?
Yeah, it's almost like if somebody is going, I would like to engineer my own spiritual recession, I would like to wreck my life and ruin my relationships, I would like to increase the discouragement level of my life, just do these 7 things and happen every time. And it was interesting. I got invited. This is a pretty cool thing. I mean, the Warrior-Cleveland game's on tonight, and I'm a Golden State Warriors fan because I live real close to there. And so I'm going to figure out a way to be in front of the TV. Everybody in America has now heard of Steph Curry. I mean, the guy's amazing. I mean, he just won the MVP last year, won it this year unanimously, which is the first time in history. And I played basketball when I was in college, and I'm watching this guy. And as Charles Barkley said, that guy is playing a game of which I'm not familiar, and nobody ever has shot from out there and made it before. Wow. So I got invited to go to Arco Arena to the Sacramento, where the Sacramento Kings play, to see the Warriors and Kings. And this buddy of mine's got tickets right behind the opposing bench. So I am sitting right behind Steph Curry and the team at the bench. Well, we get there an hour early, and get this, 1,000 people show up an hour early just to watch him warm up. And it's stunning. And I was looking at this crowd, and I thought, you know, every single person in here admires Steph Curry. I do. I'm watching this guy going, I can't do this. And I admire him. But somewhere in that crowd of 1,000 people, there's a kid, and what he's feeling goes way beyond admiration. I mean, that kid's actually going, I admire him, but you know what? What he's doing, I could do this someday, and I could play at this someday. And that kid doesn't admire Steph Curry. He wants to be Steph Curry. And he's been working out. He's been shooting 5 hours a day. I haven't worked out or shot 5 hours a day since then. But that kid's going on. And I watched that, and I thought, you know what? I'm admiring this, but one of these kids is going, I can be that guy. And I thought, man, there is a big difference. I'm an admirer of Steph Curry. That kid's a follower because he's trying to become like him. And I can't find any verse in the Bible where Jesus said, come admire me. Even though most churches have collections of Christians that admire Jesus, and so this whole chapter here is 7 habits of highly defective Christians, which is when people don't follow him, but they just settle for admiring him. What does their life look like?
Wow.
And the problem is each one of these things can be a disaster. I mean, you know, unshared faith. That's the Jesus that I've come to seek and save the lost. Christians are ignoring that. You know, unconfessed sins. That'll steal. There are a few things that steal our joy, rob our passion faster than unconfessed sin and the guilt that comes from that. Same thing, unemployed gifts. You know, my life changed when a professor told me one day, find out what your spiritual gifts are and build your whole life around them. And he said, anything else is going to lead you to an unfulfilled, unproductive, and unhappy life.
My goodness.
And each one of these things has got major, major implications.
Boy, so good, Ray. We've got about 3.5 minutes left pray here. It's been so good. And I feel like, again, scratching the surface. But you identify 3 ways to really strengthen our faith, to saturate our life in God's truth, to learn to spot counterfeit truth, and to commit ourselves to actually living the truth. Speak to these, if you would, and just any last thoughts you want to leave with our listeners today.
Yeah, what I'd say is this. Every single person listening to us talk, Susie, has 2 things in common. Number one is this. They're all building something. You know, women, they're going, I'm trying to build a marriage. I'm trying to build a family. I'm trying to raise healthy kids and build a healthy kids, trying to build a business, trying to build a ministry, trying to build a spirit. Everybody's building something. Secondly, though, is nothing gets built. Nothing gets built well on a cracked foundation or on unhealthy. The most important thing somebody can do, this is why I think people listen to your program for two things. I think they're going, hey, I need encouragement, and this helps me strengthen the foundation of my life. And what I'd say is this, to build a solid foundation, I would go back to the end of Matthew chapter 7 where Jesus said rock and sand. He said, pay attention to my words and build those. Because ultimately what's going on in our life right now is this, you're either going to build your life on truth or you're going to build your life on trends.
Wow.
And if you build your life on trends, you're never going to be emotionally or psychologically stable because trends change all the time. If you build your life on truth, you will have a solid foundation and financial, spiritual earthquakes can hit and you will be solid because you've got a solid foundation underneath you.
Such a good word, Ray. When you look at the needs, especially because, you know, the gifts and the seeds you've sown in this large church out into the community, even around the world, coming against issues like trafficking, I mean, helping those who are trafficked. How do you say no? What do you say no to? How do you discern what's the God idea and what's the good idea?
You mean in terms of me or in general?
Yeah, what you as the leader of this church and what, you know, how are you discerning, yes, we're going to go forward on this or no, we're not?
Oh, you know, I do two things. Number one is I think the most important question somebody's asked, it's the book of Proverbs, and is this wise? Hmm. Some things aren't right or wrong. Some things are more smart or stupid.
Yeah.
Okay. So some things you're going, hey, I could do that. The Bible's not against that. I can't find a verse in the Bible again that talks about smoking. Okay. So at some point you're going, not is this right or wrong, but is this wise? That's number one. Number two is this. I actually think everybody's life's better if they're humble. And so, for example, my wife, Carol, and I, we operate on what we call the green light model of decision making, which is if I think something's God's will and she doesn't, then instead of pulling the husband guard, I just assume I haven't heard from God yet, and I'm going to wait until we both get green lights. And we both get green. Same thing. I have a senior staff at our church, myself, Lincoln Brewster, Kurt Harlow, Andrew McCourt, and some other folks. We don't do anything that we all don't green light. So I'll come in with an idea, but if they don't get lit up by it and if it doesn't get green lit, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. He'll exalt you in the right time. Mm. And when the leader starts thinking he's more important than the Lord, you got real problems. And I think one of the keys to life is to go stay holy, stay healthy, but stay humble.
Yeah, and do what's wise. This has been so good, Ray. Wow. And again, Ray is at a camp and taking time out for us means so much to me. Would you pray for that person listening today who's been looking outward and been distressed or inward and been depressed but not looking upward? Would you pray for that person today?
I would love to. Lord, I thank you so much for the privilege of being on this amazing show. And I thank you for Susie, first of all. I pray you continue to surround her with your presence and your power and your peace and bless this ministry. Thanks for the gift she has. And I pray for everybody listening today, if they tuned in discouraged, would you get their eyes back on you and replace discouragement with the hope that comes from people who know you're at work even when it doesn't look like it. Thank you for the privilege of being together today in Jesus' name.
Mm, amen. Dear Ray, I'll be praying for you in the days ahead. Thank you for giving us your time again today.
Anytime. You're a lot of fun to talk with, so thank you.
I've learned so much every time talking to you. Title of his book, Jesus Called. He wants his church back, what Christians in the American church are missing. John Ortberg wrote the foreword, and you know what he said? I hope this book gets read by millions, and it's just true. So email me. I'd love for you to get in on the drawing. Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put Jesus Called in the subject line. Include your mailing address. Your name will go in a drawing. Three of you will get a copy. Coming up next for Hour 2, it is another edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. So get ready. Be armed with your health and healing questions, and you'd be surprised at what Dr. Troy has to say. So don't go away. Hour 2 is up next.